Hello, everyone, and welcome to Note to Scene, a music news podcast covering everything from pop punk to metalcore. I'm Matt Crane.
I'm Tyler Sharp.
And welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen, where every week we discuss all the biggest news stories in the music scene. Find more episodes of this show on Apple Podcasts, where you should please rate and review us. Email us at notescene@gmail.com. We have too much to talk about this week. Big news from Falling Universe and Panic at the Disco. But first, we're going to talk about the return of Under Oath. You heard that right. New song, new album, new label. It's all happening. All right, let's go. So, Fall Out Boy released these three demo tracks, which were like from the scrapped songs they made for Mania. And all I have in my notes for them is all three are bad. So I think we can kind of just brush past this story this week. What do you think?
The only word I have next to him on my notes is why.
Why? Like, they're just terrible. Hilarious.
I
Like,
don't.
why even put them out?
Nothing even makes sense anymore with Fall Out Boy. Like, Mania just needs to be erased from history, not dragged out like they're doing.
This is Note to Scene's final word on Mania. I think we can
Absolutely.
say that now.
Absolutely.
Right. Well, let's not waste any time and let's move into our main story this week, which is Under Oath. Under Oath have returned with a new song. It's called On My Teeth, and they announced their new album, Erase Me, which I believe is their first in 8 years. It's roughly 8 years. It's coming out in April on Fearless Records. So Tyler, we have a lot to talk about here with Under Oath. This is fucking huge. There's no other way to put it.
Absolutely.
So we're gonna get to everything. We're gonna talk about everything.
Okay.
But real quick, I think I want to start with the song On My Teeth. I want to just let's get our reactions, both of our reactions to the song. Let's get that in the air,
Okay.
and then let's kind of dive deeper into this whole Under Oath thing. So we'll start with you, Tyler. On My Teeth, what was your first reaction? What did you think?
So, this is a really important episode for me. I've been waiting 8 months to do this one. So,
Under Oath is Tyler Sharp's favorite band of all time.
all time, this band
And
changed
that
my life.
I'm kind
So,
of jealous because I don't have a, it's so hard for me to say favorite of all time. You know, like I don't have, you have that one band. Like
yep.
there's no challenger to Under Oath for
No,
you. They
not at all.
are your favorite. You know, I've had From First to Last, I've had Brand New, I've had Senseless Fail at times, I've had, you know,
Escape the
Something
Fate.
Corporate, The Starting Line. Like I've just like
Right.
I'm Blink, even Blink, like Blink you could say is my favorite. I've never been able to have just that one. You know what I mean? Maybe Brand New was the closest, but you have that definitive, you know, that definitive number one band. And I think Under Oath are a lot. They are that to a lot of their fans, which I think is
Absolutely.
interesting.
Absolutely.
But
But
sorry to cut you off. Go ahead
no,
with your
I mean it's a blessing and a curse, I'll put it that way, and I'm sure that will be displayed throughout this episode. So this song, I like it, I don't love it, and I don't think it's the best that Under Oath could be. So I'm just gonna break it down, 'cause I have so much to say about everything, and there's no way I could put it in a bit of a nutshell. So we have like this heavy electronic vibe right out of the gate. It's got this perfect intro that I wasn't really expecting, and the first verse is just this wall of sound that knocks you off your feet, and I was just grinning from ear to ear as soon as it kicks in. And Spencer drops Under Oath's first F-bomb of their entire history, which I mean, we're going to talk about the lyrical content later. I don't want to get into that too much now. I'm just talking about, sonics of the song, but that's definitely a conversation I want to have. Aaron's drumming, just this wall. I mean, the verses are basically just a fill, and he's just doing snare rolls and accents and tom rolls, and hey, Tim's riffs, which are unfortunately a little buried in the mix, and I think that's kind of a bummer, but that's where we get that signature Under Oath sound, is in Tim's riffs. The sleepwave vibes in the chorus, after we get out of the verse, is where we kind of get thrown for a loop. So we have this wall of sound that is Under Oath, and then once we progress through the song, we start getting these different vibes, and we're like, okay, this isn't necessarily an Under Oath song. So Aaron takes a backseat to Spencer. Aaron really only has 2 to 3 lines, depending on if you count like the backup on Spencer's scream in the at the end of the chorus. But Aaron's stutter beat that he plays in the first half of the chorus really kind of throws it off. He plays a 4 on the floor the second half, and I think that should be played the whole chorus. And I think if he sang it with a 4 on the floor the whole thing, it would have been much bigger. Spencer's cleans really holds it back. Like I said, pre-chorus and the bridge, super weak. Same spacey kind of instrumentally on the pre-chorus, but Spencer's vocals feel super forced, and a word that I never thought I'd have to use when it came to Under Oath music, but cheesy. And cheesy is a good word for multiple moments throughout this song. But the bridge, I mean, it's like they didn't even try. You know, they wrote this song with Matt Squire, who who produced the record. And I, like, they're probably sitting
Matt
in
Squire,
the studio.
Matt Squire, who has worked with everyone from 303 to pop stars. He's a big pop, mostly pop, a lot of rock too,
right? And I think the biggest band is Jimmy Eat World, and Under Oath are just fanboys for Jimmy Eat World, so I really think that that was kind of the reason they went with Matt. But like, they were probably in the studio working on this song, and Matt was like, just get back to the chorus ASAP, because like, they didn't even try on this bridge at all. It's really just like an interlude from chorus to chorus. So like I said, I like this song. I genuinely do. When I take my bias away from Under Oath, if this was just a band I had never heard before, I like this song. But it is not Under Oath caliber material. And that's the issue that I have with it.
What's your score, Tyler Sharp, for this song?
I am at a 7.5 out of 10.
Okay. Wow.
What do you think about the song, Matt?
So I'm pretty close right there with you. This song did not live up to my expectations at all. At the same time though, it's like a very solid rock song. This feels like a very sort of rock moment we're getting from Under Oath here. And at the same time, as you know, I'm let down by the song, I agree with you. It is still a good song. Like I said, solid rock song. It also just like felt really good to have them back. Just generally having Under Oath back and hearing Spencer screaming again. Like, I don't know what it was, but his screaming sounds so great on this track. And that was so good to hear him doing that again. But it's like, yeah, man, it's different. You know, like you said, I think Aaron does a really solid job on the kit. Like, he's just a monster on the kit. But I have, you know, a lot of weird little like nits to pick with this song. Like, like one thing is there's not enough Aaron. Like, you know, you see what little Aaron we get is glossed over by Spencer doing clean vocals, which is something he's still apparently going to do, you know, carrying over from Sleepwave and the last Under Oath album. He's going to try to not just scream. But it's, it's just like this way more, this song gives me the impression we're getting more of a rock thing from Under Oath than we have in the past. Like, it's almost to me like they're doing a much better job at like what Of Mice and Men are trying to do. You know what I mean? Like, you think of a song like Unbreakable by Of Mice and Men, and then you think of this, and this is just that, like, but executed way more professionally and turned up. But so I'm at about a 6.9 out of 10 of the song.
Okay.
You know, I like it. I enjoy it. I've been jamming it in my car, but it's like, you know, like I wanted to give it that 7, but then I was at a 7. Mm-hmm. But then I realized I was just at a 7 because it's Under Oath. Mm-hmm. You know, to me, this isn't 7 is a 7 is means it's a good song. And I think this is a decent song, you know. 7 to me means it's a really good song. 6.9, you know, it's right there. It's a decent song. That's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you kind of unpacked the rock direction, and that's what's really going to be the narrative around this album when it comes out, I think, anyways, because I really feel like this is going to be the fan service song. I haven't heard the album, so this is the only song I've heard off the whole thing, but I think this is going to be the fan service song, and what I mean by that is this is probably going to be the heaviest moment on the whole album. So I'm thinking that the next single we get is going to be the actual radio push. So I,
yeah, it's like you get that vibe, like they're thinking radio, and we've known Spencer has been thinking radio for a long time. You know, we've heard Spencer say he wanted Under Oath to be like, you know, Slipknot. And we hear him, you know, sort of taking over more as the clean singer. And that would kind of, because you think about Aaron's voice, Aaron has an emo voice, essentially, mm-hmm. as a singer. And that worked really well in the Almost, you know, in 2007, when right. emo was booming. That was great for rock radio. But Aaron's voice isn't necessarily one you could see at rock radio, but Spencer's more raspy, filter-esque sort of vocal delivery. You could see it working at rock radio and maybe a softer song than this.
And what just hurt so much for me is that Aaron just has a better voice than Spencer. Like Spencer's clean vocals are just so nasally. And I just feel very underdeveloped. Although I know that he's had like vocal training lessons and, you know, things to get him in this zone that they want to go for, which as we've been unpacking so far this episode, Under Oath don't want to be in the scene anymore. They want to be a big rock band. And there's a lot of problems with that. Main one being rock is in the worst place it has pretty much ever been in history. You know, like it lost the lead to hip hop and it is dead last in the streaming revolution. So they picked a really bad time in history to try and pursue this route. But there's so much to unpack here, man. Where do you want to go next?
Yeah. You got so much going on in your head. I can tell. Yeah. We could go so many different ways. But yeah, the screams, though, like I really I agree with you vocally. You know, Aaron is the better singer here. Aaron has a great voice. But and that was almost what I was expecting. I was thinking, and I shouldn't have did this. It's my fault for doing it. But I went into this with Reinventing Your Exit in my head, you know, thinking
can't do it, man.
We get that Aaron clean slate. You can't do it, you know, but I was thinking maybe they throw it back in that way at least. But I think, what do you think of Spencer's screams? Like, I was really impressed by his screaming performance on this song, at least.
And my problem, where you were thinking Reinventing Your Exit going into it, was that I did a dive, you know, the 2 days before when talk started bubbling. So to take it way back, I've known that, I learned over the summer in July that Under Oath were making a new album and new music was coming. And ever since then, I've been, you know, just thinking in my head, like, what the hell is this going to sound like? And I was thinking this even back when, you know, we broke the reunion story on Alternative Press. They have to be making new music. They're not just coming back for one tour, you know. There's just so many different ways that they could go. And I did a dive 2 days before the song came out. Rumors started circulating that the announcement was coming. I had heard that the announcement was going to be Thursday, but I didn't get any confirmation. And then they sent out unmarked CDs to people in the mail, trying to pull a little bit of a, you know, mm-hmm. brand newy kind of thing. But the Wonder Years just did recently with their album. They sent out copies mm-hmm. of vinyl to fans in the mail. So Under Oath did a little bit of that. And Reddit started blowing up, and I did a few dives, and I found this sample on the teaser website that they had with their timer, and it had this 38-second clip of a song called No Frame, which is also on the album. And it's a very mm-hmm. Nine Inch Nails-y kind of song, and I was just instant concern surged throughout my entire body, man. That this is going to be so wrong. It will destroy Under Oath's legacy, what they're about to do. So I spent
everyone wants those rock radio ads. Everyone wants the rock radio ads right now. I do not understand it.
And it's so backwards. But I was so concerned that I literally listened to Define the Great Line front to back at least 10 times before the official announcement came out. So I was in full 2006 metalcore mode by the time I heard this song.
So you whereas I was Reinventing Your Exit, you're sitting there like writing on the wall, like, bring it on.
I just wanted it to be heavy. And
yeah.
That's why I said when this intro comes in, and then Spencer comes in with his just wall of sound screams, I was grinning ear to ear. I was like, this is Underoath, right? Like,
right.
Aaron's playing a fill for an entire verse, and it's just this wall of sound. It's great.
It's a very hard song. Like, this is an aggressive song. It's fast, but it's streamlined in a way. Do you know what I mean?
It's formulaic.
Way more streamlined and formulaic than you would expect from Underoath. You know, the thing about Underoath is they've sort of trapped themselves in this point where, you know, they innovated so much. They were pioneers, first off, to start with. And they kept innovating, and they kept innovating, and they've become innovators. And you get to this point with Underoath where they're sort of trapped in this box where it's like, if they're not innovating, what's the point? You know, like, I wanted that. Sure, there was that part of me that wanted some throwback things, you know, from Underoath. Like, I wanted something like They're Only Chasing Safety. But what I really, truly have always wanted from this band is something I'm not expecting. I wanted them to just come out with something new that just blew me away. Mm-hmm. That's sort of the expectation I have for Underoath at this point. And especially something as big of a deal as, you know, coming back with a new record after 8 years or so, you know, and a breakup in between that.
But you
very high expectations.
You surely weren't expecting this, right?
No, I wasn't, but
it was
So
that's kind of the point I'm getting to. This was kind of in the wrong way. When you break this song down, it still has that Underoath creative vibe to it. This is not your typical radio K105 rock song.
This is also too hard for radio.
It's heavy, but
you know,
listen,
those verses, it's shred.
But there's moments.
There's this
in
cocoon
the song.
There's a cocoon of safety that wraps around this song that you don't feel on old Underoath albums. Mm-hmm. There's something, like you said, formulaic. I think was the perfect word.
Absolutely. I mean, when you're listening through the song, it gets predictable. You know, like, you know that they're gonna hop back into that chorus.
It might even sound weird, but you know, like, it's almost too easy of a listen. There's nothing challenging there at all about this song. And Underoath records have been a challenge in the past, and I've enjoyed that. I didn't instantly get into Underoath. It took me time. Mm. You know what I mean? It took me time and work. And this song, to me, you know, you can still hear the fact that they are such professionals and like excellent musicians on the song, but this doesn't sound that different than something like, you know, a Wage War or some other metalcore band could write.
To an extent.
It's not that far off.
Right.
They're not doing anything so special here, you know?
Absolutely.
That's why I come at my score of 6.9. You know, I'm just sort of not quite middle of the road. It's just a decent song.
Absolutely. But, I mean, they're, like you said before, they're in a very unique position with the route that they're trying to go. They're trying to be a big radio rock band, but they're also Underoath. So how do you make radio rock innovative the same way that Underoath has always made their music? And I think this was kind of their best shot at doing it while also being a fan service by being heavy. I really don't think the rest of this album is going to be heavy.
Yeah, and this song, we sort of come at that dangerous middle point, right?
Right.
Of trying to be innovative, but trying to, you know, be more radio friendly, and the two just never really meet that well. You know what I mean? You sort of got to go one way or the other,
I feel
like.
Yeah, I mean, you can't.
You
got to
go full in. You can't. It almost feels like a hesitation in a way, you know? Like, they didn't go all the way in one direction.
Because they knew that they. Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. And it bums me out to see Underoath throttled. Because that's what this feels like to me. This feels like we're putting Underoath in a box, or they're putting themselves in a box, because we know that they are some of the most creative musicians to ever come out of this scene, and everything they did always pushed the limits of whatever sound they were trying to do. And this doesn't really push any limits, but at the same time, they're doing what they're trying to do. You know, they're trying, like I keep saying, they're trying to become a big radio rock band, which is hilarious because when they, taking it back to 2008, when they were in the studio with David Bendith recording Lost in the Sound of Separation, there's a conversation that they have on that DVD with David. They're sitting down, eating dinner, and David is trying to convince them to let him kind of coach them and help them co-write a radio rock single. And Tim is literally getting offended at the thought of Under Oath doing that. And then they start bringing up, like, you know, Nickelback, and Tim, like, almost stands up and he's like, I could shred all over that dude's face. And then it cuts to David on a cutscene, you know, away from that conversation. And he says, you know, not everyone can be a Paramore. Not everyone can be a Breaking Benjamin. And it's just, it's very, as a diehard Under Oath fan, it kind of hurts to see them wrestle with this idea so much, to be what they said they were never gonna be.
And I just got to preface it by saying again, it still feels so good to have them back.
Yes,
you know, absolutely. Even though I'm let down, there's just a certain smile I get. Like, I like the fact that I can hear an Under Oath song in 2018. What did you think of the video? Because the video, I thought, communicated a certain intensity and like a certain urgency. I liked it for that, but other than that, I wasn't very impressed with this video. If this is your, you know, as your launch video, it was just sort of the band doing a performance under chaotic lighting. What were your thoughts on the video?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought it up. So, like I said, that Thursday morning, a friend sent me a screenshot of the song being played on someone else's phone. And so I just instantly, you know, went to all the leak sites, and it was on every MP3 leak site. And I found one where I could stream it. And instantly I prefaced my first listen of that song telling myself, this is a leak. It will ultimately be a lower quality than what the final mix we're going to hear later that day was. And it was, you know, the first time I heard this song was very compressed guitars. The drums sounded completely programmed. There was no life in any of the mix. And when the song dropped, I watched it. I heard it for the very first time with that music video. And I loved the way the music video conveyed this sense of urgency that I've really missed in music over the years, that Under Oath brought to the table with both They're Only Chasing Safety and Define the Great Line.
Spencer looking at, like, grabbing the camera and looking into it and screaming like a maniac. He just has a certain camera presence in music videos that, you know, communicates intensity that, like, other musicians just don't have. You think back to music videos like Writing on the Walls and everything. Mm-hmm. Like, just the way he sort of just comes at the camera in a very, like, sort of psychotic way. Like, you don't see other musicians approach a camera the way he does. It's almost like you can tell sometimes he's grabbing a camera and pulling it to his face, you know, and
absolutely
the way he holds his mic. And it's a very sort of aggressive stance, and that was cool to see in the video.
Absolutely. This one really reminded me of the In Regards to Myself video.
Where
he's
in
that room and he's kind of grabbing a hold of the camera and he's yanking on that bed. And I mean, they just nailed their aesthetic back then. Whereas,
man, I think Fuse used to play that video a lot
on the daily, man. Dude, Fuse Top 20 video countdown, The Sauce. Remember that show?
I remember seeing that video and I was like, what's the dude from The Almost doing on Fuse?
Gosh. right. Man, the good old days. But yeah. Loved, there's always been a sense of danger about Under Oath's music, even taking it back to their poppiest moments on...
Can we just quickly shouts to, like, 2006, 2007 Fuse? Shouts to that for happening?
Kevin's Untitled Rock Show? Come on, man, let's bring it back.
Absolutely.
But,
I think it was Stevens' Tyler Show.
Shit, my bad. My brain is going in 100
doing
different
the old
directions,
God,
man.
Doing them wrong, man.
I know. I'm all
it's
all right,
man. This is an emotional day for you, Tyler.
It is. This is an emotional, crazy recording episode. Definitely. So... like I said, there's always been a sense of danger about Under Oath's music that just kind of made you feel a bit uneasy, but still inviting. Like, you wanted to feel this sense of just, like, urgency about this music. Even when you take it back to, say, I always bring up the breakdown in Young and Aspiring, the first moment we hear on They're Only Chasing Safety, which is their poppiest record. I mean, the end of that song is one of their heaviest moments of a band all time, and they're even the album cover that they have there is one of my favorite album covers of all time.
You want to talk about urgency? Aaron's clean vocals when they first come in on that track,
absolutely,
like, that's
dude.
Urgency, you know, defined. Like, you just feel like this is an important song. Like, everything.
Yes,
Aaron makes you feel like everything is at stake on that song.
Absolutely.
You know?
That band is perfect at making you feel like.
And that's my favorite record. Might even be my favorite. It's one of my favorite Underdog songs, you know, but that's why, you know, that's my favorite record. There's that, this manic sense of, you need to listen right now. This is really important to that whole fucking record that I don't know if I've ever heard another record that, you know, sort of moved me in that way and captured my attention that way. And that's why that's my favorite Under Oath record.
Exactly. Importance is the perfect way to describe Under Oath music. When you listen to it, you feel like you're supposed to be listening to it. You know, like you're sitting in a classroom and the professor is saying things and you feel like you should be paying attention to it. And when you listen to Under Oath, they always make you feel like you're there for a reason. And they always have your attention no matter what they're doing. And this music video really helped me to tie into the rest of the song that, you know, when I watch this music video, I can't look away. And that doesn't happen to me a lot. I've said it on the show many times before that I am not a music video person. They really never do much for me. And I haven't even always liked a lot of Under Oath music videos. But this one, I think performance music videos are somewhat underrated just because of how, you know, the modern metalcore movement kind of destroyed them.
Well, and it depends on the performer, you know.
Absolutely.
And Spencer is a world-class performer.
Exactly.
You know, when it comes to stage presence and videos.
Absolutely. So seeing this video with the song, to get back to your original point on this,
other musicians I've talked to, you know, from maybe smaller bands or medium-sized bands, like, who didn't know Spencer, you know, I think Spencer was kind of reclusive for a while, and only the past few years has he really, like, gotten to know a lot of musicians in the scene and sort of befriended them. There was a while there where a lot of musicians I knew looked at him like a god. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
They didn't hear him talk much, and he was just sort of this towering, menacing presence on stage, and that was just sort of all they knew him as, and like this godlike figure.
Absolutely. And you really got, I feel like that demeanor and that description of Spencer really came after Define the Great Line came out. He's a demon on that record, man. His range on that album is absolutely ridiculous. And I know you and I have the argument all the time off the show that you say the math is all wrong on that record. And it is, but it's still so incredible, and the math
that's
is 100% wrong.
That's what I appreciate about it, though,
uh-huh.
is they really push themselves in these weird, uncomfortable directions. That's what I even like about Disambiguation.
Mm-hmm.
You know? They sort of push themselves in these weird directions. I'm all for it. Like, let's find something new, you know? Man, not to go back to Fuse again, but didn't Mark Hoppus have his own show on Fuse? Remember that?
Yeah, God, what was that called? I almost called it Mark Hoppus
something. Yeah,
Hoppus.
Were Under Oath on it at one point?
Oh, I'm sure. I'm totally
I feel like
sure.
They were
on the.
Yeah,
on
Hoppus
the,
had his own show, like a daily show, I think, on Fuse, and I think Under Oath were on it. But yeah, man. Yeah. Now I'm having all these weird Fuse memories. But
it's funny. I was actually looking up Under Oath interviews, and I found one on Fuse from 2004 when they were on their only Chasing Safety cycle, and that was way old school.
Dude, Fuse was lit back then, man. Like they knew what was up
for a
like,
good 8 years, man. God, for a good eight man. Years. But yo, that Mark Hoppus show was called Hoppus on Music.
Right, there you go. Okay, yeah, I like that show.
Yeah.
I miss having a scene television network.
I'm
sure a lot of our listeners miss that too.
Absolutely. Just another product of a dying scene, man.
So Under Oath have signed to Fearless Records.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to come out like right here and say, I think this is the wrong move for a number of reasons. A, I think Under Oath returning should be a much bigger deal.
Mm-hmm.
Fearless just is not a big deal kind of label, you know. I think Under Oath should be signed to a major or maybe some bigger, more established indie possibly, but most likely I think they should be signing to a major. I just, Fearless Records doesn't have the prestige I feel like necessary to carry a prestige band like Under Oath, you know. Like I can't see an Under Oath video coming out next to on the same YouTube channel as that Bless the Fall garbage we're getting, you know, with the pink letters. I just, it just, the branding is off for me, and also, you know, it's a working theory we have, but it looks like Under Oath are going in this Radio Rock direction, and we, you know, Fearless aren't particularly that great at rock radio. I mean, you know, I Prevail did well, but I think that's more credit to I Prevail than Fearless. You know, I think I Prevail are working their own thing. So it's like, if you're gonna go in that radio direction, you know, why aren't Under Oath on a Roadrunner or Warner Brothers? That, you know, that just seems like something they could have done.
So I totally agree with you, but my I guess this is kind of counts toward my diehard Under Oath fan. My response to that it was just kind of immediately when I found out that they were on Fearless that they were turned down by any major label, because I feel like if they had the opportunity to go to a Roadrunner or Warner Brothers or any major label, they would have taken it. They would have taken
it,
man.
It's, you think, because it's so hard. If fucking Roadrunner's out here signing like Code Orange and like
just
Creeper.
Bullshit. Yep.
And you know, the people who work at Roadrunner, you know, like I know some of them, and they know about Under Oath. They
They're
know
aware.
What a big deal and a moneymaker this band is. So I just couldn't see like Roadrunner turning them away, which is, I bring up Roadrunner because that's probably one of the bigger rock labels, but. Fuck, man. You know, like, Sleeping with the Sirens just went to Warner Brothers. You know, like, I don't see why Under Oath couldn't have done that. You know, Atlantic's an option.
Yeah.
There are, you know, Capitol. Like, there are some labels, some big labels, I think, that could have really blown this out and helped Under Oath execute this vision.
Yeah, I think comebacks are very unique situations, and Under Oath is also very unique because they built up a lot of stamina with the Rebirth
right.
tour and then the Bring Me the Horizon support tour. But at the same rate, you know, it's like we've said, it's been 8 years since they released their last album, and they had been on the downslope since 2006, you know, commercial wise, when that
True.
Album came out. So they didn't have much to pitch to major labels to say, we're
right.
going to be worth your while.
You almost wonder why they wouldn't just do the brand new thing, which worked so well for Brand New with Science Fiction. They could pull that off. You know, Brand New did it and still got, you know, the number one record in the country.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, it's really, every comeback is a unique situation. And Under Oath's fan base, while Die Hard, just does not operate on the same wavelength as Brand New's. And I was so interested to see how the socials were going to perform, how the song was going to perform in the, you know, 1 to 5
how many
days
retweets, how many likes,
after.
How many shares.
Exactly. I was refreshing like on the hour for the last
yeah.
5 days to see what they were doing. And I'll just go into it right now. So we're recording Sunday night. The song was dropped Thursday afternoon at 4 p.m. Eastern. The song on Spotify had 77,000 plays in the first day, and now it's sitting at 153,000, and the YouTube video is sitting at 376,000 plays. They did get on to the official Spotify metalcore playlist and Crash Course, which is kind of Spotify's post-hardcore playlist. The Facebook post was probably the brightest light. It got over 20,000 reactions on it, and it got close to, if not over by now, 10,000 shares, which was really cool to see. I knew that they were going to get their most momentum on Facebook, because if you get anything to get even a little attention on Facebook, it's really going to ride. But the problem is getting that attention.
About those numbers, like, for me, they're disappointing.
Yes.
And they're disappointing because I really focused on that YouTube number, because that was the video that dropped. You know, it wasn't available on Spotify. That was where you had to listen to the song.
That's where everyone went. All of the traffic
and
was directed.
Sitting at 300, and you said it's at 370 now? It was at 350 when I checked earlier today.
Yeah,
376. 370,000. That, to me, it seems a little low, doesn't it?
So,
you know, for example, the new Falling Universe song we're going to talk about already has more views than that.
429.
And that there's something wrong with that. You know, Falling Universe, Drop a Lucy single, and it has more views than the Under Oath comeback. That doesn't feel right to me. It feels like something You know, maybe it's the quality of the song. I don't know what it is. Maybe some people have moved on, but that just doesn't feel like a big response that I was looking for Under Oath to have.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I was going to bring up the Falling in Reverse song to talk about this point as well. And it was kind of interesting because right out of the bat, Under Oath shot up so quick because of that initial hype. And they blew, you know, the Falling in Reverse song and Under Oath song, to put in perspective, came out within hours of each other.
Yeah.
And it was a very good kind of spectrum to judge, you know, reaction of a more current band and a band on a comeback. And Under Oath were blowing them away, and I was really happy with the first day numbers. They were pretty far ahead of Falling, but as time has gone on here, Falling has really kind of pulled away from them in those YouTube streams. But on Spotify, the new Falling song still only has about 44,000, I believe it was.
Yeah.
And the Under Oath song has the Falling in Reverse song has 84,000 plays since Thursday, and the Under Oath song has 156,000. So there is that gap there.
They're beating them on Spotify, but, you know, I mean, people want to see that Ronnie video. And the thing is, Falling in Reverse, this isn't like, they're not at the gold standard of their career. You know, they're not like, this isn't the toughest competition for Under Oath. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
And this also is just a random single. This isn't, you know, Falling in Reverse announcing a new album. We just got Coming Home. So it's like, I would have expected Under Oath to blow away. And we're talking like it's a comeback, but, and tell me if I'm wrong, but like to me, this feels more like a hard reset than a comeback. Like, you get that vibe too? Like, I get the vibe like this band is resetting.
Like a new band?
Yeah, like, it doesn't feel like a comeback. You know, this doesn't feel like, I'm trying to think what was a recent comeback we had from a band, you know?
A band who's
We had Thrice come back, you know?
Sure.
You know, after a while. And that felt like a comeback to me. This, to me, feels like a reset, like they're gonna be a new band. This feels more forward looking. This doesn't feel like a nostalgia comeback.
Exactly. You know? This comeback is not a fan service. And when I say that this song is the fan service, that kind of puts it all in perspective, because this is not the old Under Oath that we knew and loved. You know, this is a band who is quote unquote coming back to be a different and bigger band than they were before. Whereas we've had other bands come back as a way to kind of capitalize on nostalgia more so, you know, like there's a band, anyone who was around during the screamo era in the mid 2000s, there's a band called As Cities Burn who are on Solid State, and they're going to be dropping new music later this year. And I can say that because they've played new music. It's on YouTube. You can go look it up. That is very reminiscent to the Sun I Loved You at Your Darkest era. And we never got the proper follow-up to that. So it's looking like we're going to get a proper follow-up to that album finally after, what, like 12 years. That is a fan service thing to do, because that band doesn't need to come back. And if they do come back, they don't need to write that album.
So lyrically, this song read to me, you can read it a couple ways, but I read it, it's an indictment of someone, or it's an indictment of God. You know, I don't know if it's an indictment of God per se. You know, there are these themes sort of Under Oath struggling and rejecting religion that have sort of been making the rounds. But Spencer's singing about, you know, where were you? You know, sort of like, you turned your back on me when I was in the darkness. I'm in the darkness again. I don't want you anymore. And, you know, the song is an indictment of someone. I don't know if it's a girlfriend or if it's God or a family member, someone who betrayed Spencer. What are your thoughts on the lyrics, Tyler?
Yeah, so it definitely has to do with their past and their relationship with Christianity and religion and God as a whole. And I have talked to Aaron, Spencer, Tim multiple times, you know, since what, 2014, 2015, about where their kind of religious ethos lie now in current day, because they were already straying away from them when Disambiguation came out, and they were having these conversations about not being a quote unquote Christian band anymore. So I think this song is more so, You're totally right. It can be interpreted in many different ways, but I think it's mainly towards one, the church, and two, the Christian music industry as a whole.
Aaron, I mean, you think of this lyric, "You got the best of me and stab me in the back."
Right.
I mean,
so,
you know, is he talking to God there? It's like this religion got the best of him and he gave his all to it and it turned his back on him. Is that how we're supposed to read this?
Kinda. So to unpack it a little bit, Aaron, when he left Under Oath, he embarked on a solo career, and it was a worship career, and it was cemented 100% in the CCM industry, which is Christian contemporary music. And that industry, much like country music, is completely separate from the rest of the music industry. And honestly, the CCM industry is more sinister than even the pop music industry.
That's a whole podcast.
Exactly. It's a whole different conversation. But I will say, you know, Emery is actually making a documentary right now about this industry and how it kind of capitalizes on manipulating people's perceptions of God.
Okay.
And
so I read it more as, so I was reading it as an attack on this song almost as an attack on God, whereas really it's an attack on organized religion, not your own personal faith
because
or their own personal faith. It's an attack on the system.
Exactly.
That makes more sense. He's saying, you know, what you believe, your life is a lie. Get over it, you know?
Exactly.
Save yourself, no one else. I'm not your fucking prey. All these lines.
So that's where a lot of that mid-2000s Christian, screamo, post-hardcore, metalcore, pop punk, tooth and nail, solid state era is at nowadays, you know? And I kind of give a lot of credit to that, to the Bad Christian podcast that Emery runs. You know, and that's how I found all this music. That's how I got into the music scene. We found this kind of scene that we could exist in and also exist, you know, within the Warped Tour greater kind of underground screamo whatever scene it was. But we were taught these things growing up that were wrong, and
right,
a lot of us, you know, kind of now that we're older, we've grown up, we've realized that some of those things were wrong. And we're pissed,
right?
You know, we're mad that we were taught these things that were so wrong growing up. And I really feel like that is the ultimate gist of this song. And we
makes
could go deeper, but that's the whole thing. They're mad about how they were kind of led astray growing up, but they were told that they were on the right path.
When you put it in that context, it actually makes perfect sense. It's funny. I was like, are they really saying, you know, fuck you, God, you turn your back on me? But sorry, do you have anything else on Under Oath, Tyler, you want to speak on? We've gone pretty long on Under Oath.
We have, and I could probably go for 3 more hours, but I'm very excited that this band is back and we can have these conversations. I'm hesitant with the song, and I've never been hesitant with Under Oath's music before, and that's why I gave it a 7.5 out of 10. But like you said before,
it's a good score.
I'm so glad that this band is back. They seem happy with one another. They seem like they're good friends, because we'll have to do the Under Oath cast, but this band has never been friends with each other, ever. They've broken up like 5 times behind the scenes over their career. And
that's a whole thing.
It's a whole other thing, and
we're gonna have to do an Under Oath bonus episode, because we could go album by album, history by history.
We got it.
I just want to shout out Spencer's blonde hair in the music video. I think it looks fucking fire. That's a nice change up, you know. We've always seen him in an Under Oath with black hair.
I got a lot to say about that too, but we can't.
Yeah,
I think we got
okay.
Do
so real quick before we move on. Okay. First week sales predictions for the album.
Oh,
I want to do it now.
God,
I know you know the numbers like by heart, so just run down the first week sales of Under Oath's career real quick.
I don't have They're Only Chasing Safety, because that was the first real push that they got, and it wasn't that high, but that album did end up
High, but that album sold a lot. It burned for a long time. It went gold, sold over 500,000.
It's really got to be close to platinum at this point, as I think Define is. But Define did 98,000 first week, Lost in the Sound did 54,000, and Disambiguation did 24,000. 1,000.
Okay, so where do you see Underoath coming in with this record?
Oh, I have thought way too much about this in the last week, Matt. You have no idea. And I've kind of come, due to the current state of the scene, as anyone who has listened to this show knows, it is not well, and rock music is not well. So I kind of looked at it compared to another comeback, and that was Seosin. And Seosin's comeback album did 11,000. Anything over 11,000, I will honestly be content with. So I am going to go with 13,000 first week for Underoath. Where are you at, Matt?
Yes. You know, it's tough. I'm jumping between. I feel like it's got to come down from Disambiguation, which you said did 25,000?
24.
Right? 24, okay, so right around there. I'm feeling, you know, I'm feeling about 17. That's where I'm going to stick at.
God,
17.
I will be elated with 17,000, man. I will be
happy. I think the fans will rally. I think that's an appropriate drop. But we got to move on to our next story. Great talking about Underoath.
Before we do, can I hold you to doing a bonus episode the week that the album comes out?
We will talk about that.
Okay. All right.
Next story. 5 Seconds of Summer have returned with a new song. It's been a while since we heard from these guys. The song is called Want You Back. Have you had a chance to listen to it, Tyler Sharp?
Oh, I gotta switch gears here. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. I have. Just wipe the sweat off your forehead. Just
gotta
breathe.
Relax. Gotta bring it back. I have heard the new Five Sauce song, and I am completely 100%. I knew this was coming, and also very perplexed at the same time. They're a pop band. Like we said, when they were on our most anticipated albums list, we're just like, they have to be a pop band now, because the last quote-unquote pop punk album that they did didn't really get them anywhere. So they've gone away, they've come back, they're a pop band now, from what we know from this song. Interesting, only Luke is on this song, from what I can tell. You know, correct me if I'm wrong. But
There's some backups in there from the other dudes.
Okay, but it's mainly just Luke. And I think that's kind of interesting in and of itself, and we can unpack that a little bit. But the very intro to this song, I thought I was listening to that Logic song, 1-800. The keys are a little similar, and it's got kind of those strings in the background that give it the exact same vibe. And then it comes in, and they just rip off the 1975.
So where are you at? Do you like the song?
I do not like this song. I don't think it's what they need to do. They needed to just become the next One Direction. Like rip off Logic. Let's do that. You know, let's not rip off the 1975, who are a much, much smaller output of a band. But I am at a 6 out of 10 for the song. What about you?
Yeah, it's funny. I had the exact same reaction as you. Is the 1-800 piano riff came right in, and of course it did. And the 1-800 piano riff is jacked right from the car radio riff from 21 Pilots. 21 Pilots. So it's like, of course they're going to do a Logic 21 Pilots, Chainsmokers, Spotify core, EDM pop song. And yeah, no more rock. You know, the last album sort of doubled down on rock for them with songs like She's Kinda Hot. I think going pop for this band at this point, I think it's the right move. Mm-hmm. I just think this song is uninspired though. And this song is the wrong song. And I'm at about a 5.5 out of 10 with the song.
Okay.
One of the more interesting things I noticed about it is that, like, Luke is embracing, he's Australian, he's embracing his accent on this song. Yep. Almost like a la Ed Sheeran. Like, did you notice that? Like, because when you think about a song like She Looks So Perfect, they're affecting American accents on that song.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? You wouldn't even know they're from Australia, but it's almost like now that Ed Sheeran, with his accent, you know, that British kind of accent, is having so much success, like the Luke is letting that go. I thought that was really interesting, and it seemed calculated to me, because I had never heard the band actually sound like an Australian band, you know, vocally. And this is the first time he's really like letting his natural voice out.
Definitely. So when I first heard the intro, I was 100% on board. I was like, yes, 5 Seconds of Summer, just rip off 21 Pilots. You're just going to soar to the top of the charts. And then it kicks in and they're just ripping off the 1975. And it's just like, why? Yeah. You have such an opportunity here to just steal 21 Pilots and steal the click. Just do it.
Yeah. So I'm at a 5.5 out of 10. This could grow on me. Like, you know, I like dark pop a lot. So there's potential it could grow on me. But as of now, that's where I'm at. Did you see the tour they announced? This is the other thing I want to talk about.
I saw a headline for it. I didn't see venues or anything.
They announced a tour. Yo, homie, fam. They're straight up playing House of Blues.
Oh my god!
Like,
gosh.
All the American dates. So they're playing 1,000 caps. They're playing some theaters that are like 1,500 to 1,800 caps. Wow. Like, this just goes to show what can happen to a band, you know, when they're gone. You know, because the debut album, what did it do? Like 300,000 copies first week.
It was
went
like
gold, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, it was up there. And the second album, the one where she's kind of hot.
170
you know,
something, I thought.
Big drop.
Yeah.
Yeah, didn't, I don't even think it went gold. You know, but that's still a lot to sell. You know, and they were playing huge fucking shows.
Right, but no hits.
And, you know, you go away. Yeah, no hits. You go away for a few years, you have no hits. And now they're playing, you know, the same size venues as... is Sleeping
Low
with Sirens or Falling in Reverse. Yeah, you know, it's like All Time Low are probably playing bigger venues. You know, I don't
Gosh.
Think, you know, House of Blues is too small for All Time Low.
Well,
you know?
They were doing...
I can't believe 5 seconds...
Yeah.
5 seconds of Summer are going to be playing to 1,000 people a night. You know, this is a band yeah. that should have been playing to amphitheaters, you know, 5 to 10,000 people a night. That's...
Well, rock
it,
music,
wow,
man.
You know?
Yeah, rock music is canceled. It's over.
I don't feel like they care. Do you get that feeling too? Like, is there a lack of caring there?
I think so. I think the way they went about this was very wrong. First off, the gap was way too long. People have moved on. Yeah. You know, I really think it's over. And second, they really got overshadowed by the new Post Malone single, which we're going to talk about, hopefully, if we have time at the end. You know, they got... If it wasn't for Post, 5 Seconds of Summer would have got top priority on all the big Spotify playlists, but Post ended up getting it and really overshadowed their comeback. So,
yeah. And as far as any scene attention, you know, they thrive on scene attention too. It all went to Undereath, I feel like. So,
yeah,
like,
definitely.
You know,
I mean, the alternative press pass had no engagement.
Bad timing.
It.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? But it was almost like people forgot they were a band. They're still on Capitol Records, their major label. Interesting. So, they're still going to get some kind of push, but
yeah,
you know, I think that's about.
Have you seen a picture of them, what they look like now?
I have.
Everyone but the one emo kid who still has the emo swoop looks like they're in One Direction.
All right, let's move on to our next story, which is Falling in Reverse. Falling in Reverse, Ronnie Radke and Co. released a new random Lucy single that we didn't see coming. It's called Losing My Mind. Tyler Sharp, what do you think of Losing My Mind?
Why didn't they just call it Alone Part 2? That's what I want to know, because on the artwork for the single is a Lamborghini. And I don't understand why they didn't just fully capitalize on it. Like, bands, don't be stupid. Just do what's going to get you the engagement. I promise it'll work.
Shouts to Ronnie's ghost ride of the Lamborghini in the Alone video. Shout.
Isn't that iconic at this point?
Shout.
That iconic yeah. scene moment. So this song, it is not what I want from Falling in Reverse. We should not be reverting to rap. I thought we were past that on the last album. This song is kind of a mix of Fashionably Late and Coming Home, where we have this big kind of ethereal ambient sound, but he's also throwing down what apparently he thinks are sick bars. They're not. The video, interesting. I thought this was the perfect time to fade the band into the back and just make this Ronnie Radke. Make Falling in Reverse Ronnie Radke. In the video, there is a lot of Ronnie, but there's also a full band playing. Like, it's time to seclude right. Ronnie from the rest of any type of band that is backing him live. Like, it's... They did the promos. They had the falling out last time. It is time to fully embrace Ronnie Radke as the sole member of Falling in Reverse, just like Brendan and Panic. Like, that's a no-brainer at this point, so
hey,
to not see them embrace
Ronnie,
that.
Ronnie's loyal, though. Ronnie's a loyal guy. Loyalty means
man.
A lot to
him. Loyalty is going to drive his band into the ground.
Loyalty is what Ronnie has built his entire life on. We saw it, you know, him and Max Green. You know what I mean? It's important now.
It's whatever. The song, it's almost a reversion. Like, they're going backwards, and I don't want to see that. I want to see more of the obviously hanging on and post-hardcore tendencies, but also, you know, just like fuck you and all your friends and coming home and loser and those big massive songs. We don't need the rapping. Like, I thought we were past that. We were, right? Like, we don't need to go back to that. That was an uncomfortable time, I think, for all Ronnie fans.
What's your score, Tyler Sharp?
I am at a 6.5 for this song.
Okay, not bad. You think it's a decent song.
The chorus is not bad at all. Like, yeah. It still has those coming home moments, especially instrumentally. But Ronnie, like, lose the bars, man. You're not a rapper. Stop trying. I know you love Eminem, but like that dude flopped too. Like, it's time to move on. Let's keep the train moving forward. Let's not go back. But where are you at, Matt?
Okay, so as a person who loves Alone, I love that song. We bumped it in the AP offices almost every day. I still love that song. I like this song. You know, with SoundCloud rap going on, I feel like, you know, Ronnie knows, and I feel like it was inevitable he was going to get back into rap. And his bars are not the best, but just his overall flow and sonically, I think, is tolerable and works in this song. And it's weird, you get like rap but really meeting like sort of the old emo Escape the Fate on this song. Like, that is a really good emotive chorus in that song. I just really like it. And you know, I like this video. I like the posturing of it, of Ronnie right now in this song. I like the confidence. I thought the video was really cool too, like just the neon lights, everything about it. It was really well shot. You know, you've got this crazy thing with this girl puking black liquid into his mouth, and it was the first time, like, I don't know, we've seen like a Falling in Reverse video in forever that felt like intense. And just, it was so creative the way they did the video with just all these neon lights. And if you haven't watched this video, you really should, just for the just go check it out for the visualization of it, because I mean, you got green lasers, red lasers going everywhere, and the band their drummer's wearing a gas mask. The band have just totally stylistically changed, almost like this Blade Runner chic to them. You know what I mean? Like, there's this robotic core kind of thing they're clad in the video. And yeah, I like this song. I think it could be, you know, Coming Home was a good album, but it wasn't my favorite. And I think this song, you know, this could be an interesting reset for the band. For me, I'm at a 7 out of 10.
Wow. For the song. Okay. So you like this better than the Under Oath song?
I do.
All right.
Just a little bit. We're talking 6.9 to 7.
You know, no, what I mean? I know. It's right, it's there, but chorus. I had to bring it up.
You had to do. That chorus drove home for me. And there was something just exciting about it. I don't know.
Yeah,
I think it could be
That's what redeemed the song for me. But the scene in the music video where he's like floating into the sky,
That was a little indulgent. Yes,
that was too far, man. It really ruined.
Man, those lasers.
Keep it in the room. Just keep it in the room. That's all they had to do.
I agree. Those lasers. That was just like so cool. I don't know. Maybe I'm, you know, like a child. I'm easily amused. But there are a lot of lasers, neon lights in this video, and I'm fucking all about it.
It was a very entertaining clip.
If Ronnie could work on his bars, like, I could see them functioning. Like these raps weren't as absurd as Alone. You know what I mean? Like,
right, they were
the
more
way
reserved.
He's rapping, he sounds more like a rapper. You know, whereas on Alone, he just sounds like a punk ass scene bitch trying to rap. He does sound like his raps aren't good. His rhymes aren't good. Totally not good at all. Like, he rhymes NASDAQ with something, and it was terrible. But like, his flow and just the way he sounds a little more comfortable as a rapper. So I am, I like the song. 7 out of 10. It's good. I hit that check mark on Spotify.
Man, the chorus was what redeemed it for me. But it feels like he's just, every time Ronnie raps, it feels so forced and disconnected from the rest of the song. You know, like, he's just trying to be this hard rapper for the sake of being a hard human being. I just like seeming like an edgy person, you know, because we know love that Ronnie loves to be edgy. So if I'm all for him.
I do agree with you on the Alone comparison. It's very got sort of the guitar driving the beat like an Alone, and you got the emotive chorus. But I would say the raps are just a little. It's less antagonistic. It's less absurd.
It's a
little better.
No bars about tweets. Thank God.
Okay. Let's move on. You know, before we go, let's hit our pop story, which this week is Post Malone, coming off, you know, the bombshell hit single Rockstar, which probably was the biggest song of 2017. If not, you know, it's one of two or one of three. He has released his new single, the follow-up to Rockstar, and it is called Psycho. Tyler Sharp, I know you listen to Psycho. What do you think of it?
It is so interesting how similar this song is to Rockstar as far as like the structure of the song goes. We have this constant beat that follows the whole song. He comes in, you know, with the chorus, verse, chorus, feature, chorus. There's so much repetition. And the song itself, I mean, Post's vocal approach and the hook of the song, it is incredible what this guy is doing right now with kind of infusing hip hop and these pop hooks in the same kind of nutshell. And I know, you know, a lot of people don't agree with this, but there's just no one else doing it like Post is now. And he's proving time and time again with every song that he drops that, you know, White Iverson was not this kind of one hit wonder kind of deal. And Post just...
Well, no, I mean, what the fuck is White Iverson? You know, most people now know him for Rockstar.
Right,
you know?
Exactly. And Rockstar...
People before that, I was congratulations.
Right.
You know?
So Rockstar, to put it in perspective, was number one worldwide on Spotify as the highest daily stream song for I think it was over 100 days in a row since like the day of its release to passed up to Christmas. I really feel like this is going to have the same effect. I think this song is fantastic. The hook is there. They have the same song structure. And I think the feature, Ty Dolla $ign, I think his feature fits the song a lot better than 21 Savage's on Rockstar. So I feel like this is a bit more cohesive of a song. It had over 5 million streams on Spotify in its first day. And it's about to dethrone Drake, finally, off the top of the Spotify charts for God's Plan. That's been up there since the day it got dropped. But this one's definitely coming for the top, I would say.
What's
ASAP.
Your score, Tyler Sharp?
I am at a 8.9 out of 10.
Wow.
I love this song, Matt. Where are you at with it?
I am on the complete opposite
Whoa.
Side of you, man.
Whoa.
I found this song so boring
Get
and lame.
Here.
You know, I like vibe and mood tracks, and this is definitely like vibey and moody. It's like chill and somber and sort of reflective, but man, this song bored the fuck out of me to the point where it you know, and I loved Rockstar, and that was what got me on board with Post. You know, I didn't, you know, I liked White Iverson. That was cool. I didn't like Congratulations, but Rockstar got me on board. I was like, all right, this guy can be like a really good pop star. But man, this song just bored the absolute fuck out of me. And it started to make me wonder, like, how long the Post thing will actually last. Like, this song is making me question, like, he might just be one of those burn bright, burn fast kind of artist.
I don't think so.
The feature, I'm on the complete opposite side of you with the feature here. I think like on Rockstar, I think 21 Savage absolutely murders it, and I think he has probably the best verse on that song, you know.
Ooh.
And I think he crushes it. I think he makes it, you know, he just makes it so interesting, and there's such a good contrast there. And that's my favorite part of the song is when Savage comes in.
What?
And Ty Dolla $ign here seems so fucking like misused. He's barely distinguishable from Post in their flow and their singing. Ty Dolla $ign is like a hook guy, you know what I mean? That's what he's usually used for, you know, or adding a verse to a fifth harmony like he did. And he just blends with Post, and it feels like a weird place to use him. And so I'm totally on the opposite side of the feature. I am at a 4 out of 10.
Wow. See, it's so funny because I remember when we talked about Rockstar when it first came out on the show, and I didn't like the 21 feature, and you loved it.
Oh,
I just
yeah.
love
I'm
how...
I'm all about it.
I love how Ty's verse here fits with the song. It serves the song. It's not trying to be boastful and be its own thing. It's just...
See, for me, it was just a little more fog injected into a bunch of fog stuff.
Yeah, like, you didn't like the song as it like is. Right.
It just felt like one thing just falling out of Post's mouth to me.
Man, I just feel like his flow and the way he delivers everything on the, you know, his vocal approach to it. I thought he nailed this song, and I don't think I'm alone, man. It got over 5 million streams worldwide on Spotify.
Yeah, no, and like, listen, I didn't like Congratulations, and that song
was
fucking
huge.
Which was
a banger,
you know?
Banger Nation.
I just, this is the first, I'm questioning, you know, the longevity of Post now. I'm wondering how real is this, and how big is he going to be for how long, you know?
Right.
I don't know. I don't think this song is going to do as well as Rockstar. I'm going to say that.
Oof. We'll see. It's already up at the top of the Spotify charts. It's got just Drake to dethrone at this point. We'll
see. At this point, though, like, anything Post drops, you know, old
exactly.
stuff is on the charts. So
exactly.
It's like, I don't know. That is all I feel confident about, is that I don't think it's going to do what Rockstar did.
We'll see. We you know, we got his follow-up album coming out later this year, Beer yeah. Bongs and Bentleys. So we'll see if he can actually follow up and deliver. But I think, you know, he's on the right track.
Hopefully there's a little peep feature somewhere on there. We'll get.
Hopefully. Absolutely.
All right. That is it for the show this week, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoy the show, please take the time to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. If you have any questions for the show, email us at notetoscene@gmail.com. Thank you so much, everyone. We will see you next week.